How's that for reassuring?
We're getting killer vibes. Hello and welcome to the 11th episode of The Road to the Top. I am your host, Nick Roseman.
And I'm Will Wade.
And we are back after quite the hiatus. It's been a while. I've been kind of keeping you guys updated on the stream, if you guys have been watching. But, we're here. We're going to do it again.
We like to relax and recharge our batteries for a little while. It just helps us really make shows just extra good when we actually do them.
Extra good. Not just good, but extra good. Today we're going to be talking about complex board states. You know, we were going to do this show last week, but we really wanted to dive deeper into it. And by the time we kind of sat down and wrote a couple of things out, it was like 2 a.m. So we decided just to push it off another week. So here it is. I hope it's going to be a good one for you guys. It might be... it's going to be more difficult for us to talk about because, you know, complex board states are hard to kind of talk about because, you know, they're complex. So
they're naturally complex.
Yeah, we'll do our best. But before we get into all the technical garbage, we're going to do some Cracker Packs, and I believe Will has something special for us.
Yeah, today we're going to do something a little different. It's a retro Cracker Pack. So anybody who's been around for a while, they played in some of the earlier formats, or not formats, but blocks. And I have here a single pack of World Wake. So that is the... If you drafted back in Zendikar days, you'd do two packs of Zendikar and one pack of World Wake, and you'd start with the World Wake pack. So, just a couple things to note about the format was that, it was a really aggressive and combat focused format. So, you're looking to just, get guys down early, lots of little 2/2s and 2/X's and so on, and just, combat tricks and fighting and all kinds of fun stuff. Is a great set.
Before we rip it open,
yeah.
I know you're on edge, but so if we were to actually be drafting, this would be our pack one.
This is pack one, yes.
Okay, so you said it's more creature oriented, so we're gonna be looking at a lot of those. I actually did play during this set, so.
Yeah, so basically, like, there weren't a whole lot of, like, for instance, kind of side avenues to victory outside of just beating them in combat. Like, that was just, you know.
Okay, we're just trying to lay guys down and turn sideways. I like this format already.
Yeah, it's a great format. So this will help with our kind of on-the-fly, what'd you call it? Like, card evaluation?
Exactly, on-the-fly card evaluation, you know. When you sit down at these pre-releases or whatnot, you don't actually know them all, so.
All right, so let's dive right in. Pack is opened. And our first card is Bojuka Brigand, and he's a creature, he's a human warrior ally, and he costs one black. And he can't block, and he is a 1/1. And whenever Bojuka Brigand or another ally enters the battlefield under your control, you may put a 1/1 counter on Bojuka Brigand, blah, blah. So the allies were just kind of a run of creatures. They were in all the colors. And basically how they worked is the more of them you got, the better they were, because each one that comes in not only usually gets bigger, but also has an effect that applies to all of your allies. So this guy would be a great, like, turn two guy, and then you'd continue dropping allies as you go.
Yeah, awesome, okay.
Yes, but he can't block. So then next is... excuse me, some of these names are a little tricky to pronounce. Surikar Banisher, and he's a blue creature. He's 4 and a blue, and when he enters the battlefield, you may return target tapped creature to its owner's hand, and he's a 3/3. So he's a 5-mana 3/3 that has a bounce effect, but the creature has to be tapped.
Okay.
Which, in this format, is pretty typical. Like I said, lots of attackers. Next is Klahani Garden, and that is a green land, and it enters the battlefield tapped, and when it does, you put a 0/1 plant creature token into play. So it can come in, and there were lots of things that kind of affected, this was the landfall set.
Yeah.
So there are lots of things that could potentially even, like, a blink a land. So, like, there's one creature that you pay a white and you tap him, and you blink a land, which is you remove it from play and bring it back in immediately.
Okay.
So, like, you could do little tricks where you could get multiple creatures out of cards like that, lands like that. Next is Fledgling Griffin, one and a white. He was pretty good little staple guy. He's a griffin, and he's a 2-2. He has landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, Fledgling Griffin gains flying until end of turn.
Okay, so he's a bear with upside.
He's a bear with possible flying whenever you drop a land.
Nice, okay, I like it. That's my first pick so far.
All right, we'll set that guy over here. Next is Grotag Thrasher. He's a 3-3 for 4 and a red, and he's a creature lizard. Whenever Grotag Thrasher attacks, target creature can't block this turn. So lots of cards, like in the newer sets, you know, they have this ability that's tacked on, like maybe as a come into play ability or something like that. But this guy, he does it every time he attacks as a 3-3 for 5.
Okay.
So yeah, he was actually pretty. He kind of took a while to catch on. I remember back in the old days, but once he did, you know, he was just a real solid guy that had just enough effect on the combat phase that you always wanted to have him in your red decks.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, if you get it out to a nice aggressive enough start, it feels like in this format, if it's as creature heavy as you're saying, then whoever stops attacking first is probably going to be, you know, have trouble coming back. So
sure.
A guy like this who, you know, once they finally like, okay, I'm done attacking, I'm going to make some blocks, and then you're like, well, that guy can't block, you know, your most profitable blocks.
Yeah, you were hoping to block with this guy this turn, and now you, well, I mean, I guess he does, it's not a come into play ability, so they can see it coming, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, what do you do? Oh, he's going to make my 5-5 not be able to block, so I'm going to attack with it. Well, if you attack with it, then or they'll just choose another target, you know? Like, you have to leave the 5-5 back or whatever.
Alright, next is Groundswell, and it's just one green. Instant, target creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn, and it has landfall, where if you play a land that turn, instead that creature gets +4/+4 until end of turn. Next is Walking Atlas. It is a artifact creature, but it's kind of a funny little side note. It's the one, if I'm not mistaken, it was kind of a misprint when they printed it, because in its creature type, it doesn't say artifact creature. It just says creature-construct.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, it's weird. It's not actually technically an artifact creature, even though it is an artifact. And it is a 1/1 for 2, and it has tap. You may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield.
Seems pretty good with landfall.
It does seem good, but in execution, it really, if I recall right, he wasn't so hot because typically...
You're out of lands pretty quickly.
Yeah, it just, you're not often that you're really getting a lot of mileage out of the ability to play more than one land each turn.
Yeah.
All right, next, Pulse Tracker. He's a single black vampire rogue. And when Pulse Tracker attacks, each opponent loses one life, and he is a 1/1. Yeah, so the thing that vampires had back in Zendikar was that they wanted to race their opponent down to 10 life, and from there they would get some sort of special bonus out of what they did.
Get
a boost or... Yeah.
Well, in a race to 10, that seems much better.
Yeah, so what this guy wound up being was just really like an annoying little mosquito where if he came down early, you know, he'd usually attack on turn 2 for 2 damage, which you know, a good way there towards getting you there. And,
I'd imagine he gets in for probably 5 damage on average.
Yeah. Something.
I mean, attack like turn that. 2, attack on the play, you know, attack turn 2, attack turn 3.
It's usually like 3 to 4 damage. By then they've usually got something out, you know.
Yeah, but then like if you need that last point, you can swing with it anyways just to get 1 damage.
Right. Next is the probably one of the most last picked cards in the format, which is Bull Rush, and it's a single red. Instant, target creature gets +2/+0 until end of turn. What do you think of that?
Well, if it's last picked, Lada, probably.
Yeah,
Probably just, for Wii. I'll take it first.
Kind of just tells you about the general tilt of the format. Once it's a plus two plus zero. I mean, it's a pretty negligible effect, but even...
Yeah, it's like a single mana trumpet blast for one creature.
Correct.
Seems good.
All right, Feral Contest. Now, this was before the fight keyword was coined. I'm thinking of a different card, forgive me. But it is similar in that vein. It's a 3 and a green sorcery. Put a 1-1 counter on target creature you control. Another target creature must block it this turn if able. So it's sort of in that vein.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
They have to be back to block, but you do get to put a +1/+1 counter. All right, now we're into the uncommons. We have Summit Apes. It's 3 and a green. A creature ape, it's a 5/2. And as long as you control a mountain, Summit Apes can't be blocked except by two or more creatures.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, yeah, that guy could definitely just run with games. If
I like just Cobble Brute, and so that guy seems pretty good.
Yeah. Tuck Scrapper, here's another ally. 3 and a red. Goblin Artificer ally. When Tuck Scrapper or another ally enters the battlefield under your control, you may destroy target artifact. That artifact is put into a graveyard this way. Tuck Scrapper deals damage to that artifact's controller equal to the number of allies you control.
Eh, that seems good if it's relevant, but it hardly seems relevant.
Right. It's pretty rough to swing. All right. Permafrost Trap is our last uncommon. 2 and 2 blue. It's an instant, and this is one of the trap cards, which is if an opponent had a green creature enter the battlefield under his or her control this turn, you may pay blue rather than pay Permafrost Trap's mana cost. So you just get a cut rate cost if they had a green creature enter the battlefield. And it has tap up to 2 target creatures, and those creatures don't untap during their controller's next untap step. So it's like a mini sleep for 2 creatures, and it's at instant speed, and for if they play a green creature, you get to cast it for 1 blue.
That seems pretty good, especially on like a set that's creature-based.
Yeah, it definitely had its implications, and you could just... catch them unawares and get an attack in when they didn't want you to.
Yeah.
All right. Our rare is not Jace the Mind Sculptor. It is Terastodon.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I know that guy.
All right. Here he is. He is a 6 and 2 green, so he's an 8-mana 9/9 elephant. And when he enters the battlefield, you may destroy up to 3 target non-creature permanents. For each permanent put into a graveyard this way, its controller puts a 3/3 green elephant creature token onto the battlefield.
Crazy.
Yeah, so when he comes in, he's a 9/9 for 8, and you get to select on either side of the board 3 permanents and destroy those permanents, and then... on either side of, so what this guy wound up doing a lot was coming in limited and blowing up 3 of his own lands.
And then just, attacking you with the 18 power on board.
Yeah, making 18 power for 8 mana or something like
that. Seems good.
Pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, he was pretty crazy. So we got an interesting pack out of this, I think, for discussion.
I'm not sure how much ramp is the, if you want to add anything on.
Oh, that's it. That's the last.
Okay, yeah. I'm not sure how much ramp is in the set, but so I don't know how viable Terastodon is. Like, if it wasn't too hard to get up to the 8 mana and still be alive, then, that'd be a fine pick. But, 8 mana is 8 mana. Stormtide Leviathan gets passed law.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So even though, he's an insane bomb, if I can't cast him, I don't want him. So there was the 2/2, the bear that flew, which seems semi-decent. There was the 5-mana 3/3 that stopped an attacker, or stopped a blocker.
Yeah.
And then there was that other 5-mana 3/3 that did something relevant.
We had the 3/4, the 5/2 ape.
Oh, the 5/2 ape, yeah. It'd probably be either the 5/2 ape or the permafrost trap, depending on how good the trap was.
Yeah, I think the trap is something that, there was at common in Zendikar, a card called the Whiplash Trap, which was 5 mana, and 2 of those were blue. And if a creature had, excuse me, if a player had 2 creatures come into play, you could cast it for a single blue, and it would just instantly bounce 2 creatures back to their opponent's hand.
That shit was much better.
Yeah, it is. And it's, so it's kind of an interchangeable, I think this would go pretty late, actually, the Permafrost Trap.
Okay.
So I think we're looking at either the Summit Apes, the Griffin, or probably the Terastodon. I can't remember exactly what all the ramp was. I definitely did see this guy cast once or twice back in the day. So I'm sure, you know, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility. And definitely when he does come down, he just...
steals the game.
Yeah, I mean, you're giving him a 3-3 to take out one of their best cards. I mean,
sack those lands that you don't need anymore because this is the last card in your hand, usually.
Correct. So, yeah, I think at this point, I'd probably just be looking... if I was feeling good and aggressive, it'd be the Summit Apes, but that does put you into 2 colors.
Yeah, so just go in with the Dawn. I like it.
Yeah, go with the Dawn. Get big.
I like it.
Yeah, all right.
So cool. Yeah, that was pretty fun. We'll probably do a couple more, maybe World Wake. Maybe we'll get Shadow Moor or some other favorite sets.
Something else, just later and give it a try.
Yeah, you know, leave feedback, tell us if you liked it or not, you know, see what we can do better. For those of you who love Return to Ravnica, though, I have a pack here that it's been taunting me all week, so I'm just going to rip it open.
Rip that.
We got Survey the Wreckage, first pick, second pick, what do you think?
Just
slam it? Okay,
that's
cool. Alright, past it, so we don't know what else is in the pack.
Alright, what's next?
Alright, we're going to talk about complex board states. so, we have Aerial Predation, Chronic Flooding, Drainpipe Vermin. Where are you on Drainpipe Vermin?
Oh, don't get me started on Drainpipe Vermin. I drafted the Pack Rat deck, and it had 2 of those in it, and all I did the whole draft was get color screwed. When I needed, I was black-green, 2 colors, pretty straightforward, and whenever I needed green, all I drew was black, and vice versa. So I was pretty mad. I could have gone turn one sewer, whatever that guy's name is, Drainpipe Vermin, into turn 2 Pack Rat, but I kept a hand with just a green, and never drew that black.
Nice.
So, yeah, that was made me mad.
Pretty good.
What about you? What do you think about him?
I don't like him. I don't care about 1 damage in almost every game. So if I know that you might pay it and I don't want to discard any of the cards in my hand, I'm just okay, take 1 damage. You can say that makes it semi-unblockable, but, Torment's Soul was terrible if you didn't have any way to make him, bigger or better.
So. Right. I just kind of look at him as... the bottom of the barrel, 27.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Third, yeah. If I need something,
if you
sure.
need something on early on the curve, he can fill that spot, but yeah.
Yeah, I think I just almost always play Mind Rot over him if I have the choice.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay, we have Sunspire Griffin.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I like him. Solid flyer. In the right deck, he blocks a lot of the early Rakdos stuff, which makes him more favorable than, Tower Drake or whatever.
Sure.
Azorius Guildgate, Tenement Crasher, Rakdos Shred Freak, Common Bond. I like Common Bond. It's gone up a lot for me. Judge's Familiar, Seek the Horizon, Goblin Ooze.
Pretty weak.
Really pretty weak? I was about to say, he's either totally, you could just forget about him, or he just steals a board,
I guess I just have never seen him, I did get beat by him 1 time, but other than that, I don't think I've ever even seen him in play.
Oh, well, yeah, no, I don't know, he's very, it requires the right board state, but, the guy had a Golgari Guildmage, Drazda Guildmage, an Ogre Jailbreaker, and then just a stalled board, right?
Mm-hmm.
He attacks in, I make a block or something that wasn't favorable for him, so he ended up sacking an X3 to make a bunch of 1/1s. Then end of turn he plays Goblin Ooze, And then just, like, every time he attacks, I have to just chump block the goblin dudes because he could just, like, eat his fair share of,
So he basically had to have the Karazda Guild Mage. I'm just saying, you had to have the Karazda Guild Mage in conjunction with a big guy to sacrifice and then start feeding.
Yeah. You know,
feeding through the attack phase, feeding into the goblin ooze to making him bigger and bigger to the point where he got out of chump blocking or staff blocking range.
Yeah, so pretty much what happens is like you attack or you alpha, right? And anything that's, like, just gonna die, and anything that they're just trying to eat, you're like, well, I'm gonna eat it with goblin ooze. It'll get a +1/+1 counter. And now that you didn't block that, you know, you took 6 off my goblin ooze or whatever.
Yeah, that's what happened to me. Now, you would typically only be doing that... Well, I guess it depends on how many blockers they have to how many attackers you have, but...
Yeah, I mean, it definitely requires...
Last attack of the game, right?
Well, no. It breaks the stalled board state, I guess, very well. Like... I mean, unless you were on the defense, then you have goblin ooze. And even then, like, if he's swinging into you, and you're just, like, throwing creatures away, throwing them away to goblin ooze is not the worst. Okay, yeah. So our rare is Righteous Authority. I like it.
And yeah.
Then we have a foil.
Ooh.
And we got a Necropolis Regent.
A foil Necropolis Regent?
Foil Necropolis. Foil Mythics, please.
Whoa!
Crazy! Her dress is so shiny.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome, actually. Somebody opened that a long time ago, and I really wanted it. And
yeah, it's actually pretty good. Cool. Like it
looks... Yeah, the artwork is bad. Ass.
Ass.
Bad ass. Yeah. Slam the Regent?
Probably. Pack one, pick one. Like, yeah. it Slam the Regent, if that's not there... Righteous Authority or Common Bond, I guess. Like, this pack was not really special.
So, maybe let's talk a little bit about Righteous Authority, since obviously we're pretty comfortable moving in on the region here.
Sure.
But, if that wasn't in there, like, what are you looking to do when you pick one, take this card?
What does that kind of put me into for the rest of the draft?
Yeah, obviously you're electing to be playing two colors off the bat, blue and white.
Uh-huh.
And you're just kind of... Are you looking to be kind of more on the defensive and just kind of... Because the thing I've seen about that card is either it's a total blowout and just steamrolls out of control, obviously, or they... just have the right thing to kill it. It's either small enough that they can, you know, they don't get enough boost, or their creature is too small that it gets killed by Annihilating Fire or Augur Spree, something of the like, or they bounce it, something. I don't know. Just
It either gets dealt with or steals a game.
Right. So it's just kind of your all. But I mean, once it starts drawing you cards, the value is there.
Yeah, I mean, like, 5 mana, and I only draw 2 cards off of it. I'm pretty sad. Like, I don't know. What the... It is interesting, because, like, I've had to put it on things like Hover Barrier. I've put it on my opponent's creature one time. That was interesting.
Do you still draw the cards?
No, he drew them. I was trying to mail them out. I had like 5 cards in the deck, but I was dead in 2 turns. So I was like, Righteous Authority, you're the guy. Go.
At least you're thinking outside the box.
it was pretty bad. Yeah, he like killed all my creatures, so I had nothing to do with it.
Nice.
But I don't know. I find that I usually put it on like the worst creature I have. Because I put it on a flyer and it just got Aerial Predation. I put it on a pretty good ground guy, and it just got explosive impacted, you know? Like, you just don't want to put all your eggs in one basket, so you put it on, like, a Void Wielder or something.
Mm-hmm.
So then you just get this big dirtle, you know, like a 3/6 or whatever.
Sure.
So, the attack or the power and toughness usually is relevant until about the second or third turn that Righteous Authority just stay down. So, you know, you draw an extra couple of cards. But then, like, it's like, okay, attack you with my, you know, 6-7 or 6-9 or whatever. And they're just making, like, horrible blocks while you draw two cards, and which allows you to, you know, draw your life, Sky Knights or whatever, detain or bounce or whatever. So, I mean, like, it does do its work, especially in the blue-white decks that you drafted in. And I think you drafted in kind of not more of the tempo-y decks that go over. You know, you're trying to win the game later in toughness, not so much the Zorius aggro, where you're playing two drops, three drops, and then detaining your way through to victory.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess I'm looking to pick up more like Hover Barriers, Void Wielders for sure, Dramatic Rescues.
Yeah, and the more of those that you have in your deck, the less there are in your opponents, which I guess is good when you're playing a card like that.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, just Sunspire Griffins, Concordia Pegasus, Armory Guards. Anything with a lot of toughness.
Right.
Just kind of clog up the ground to a point where I can actually take advantage of it.
Cool. Yeah. I'm with it.
All right, cool. So we can move on?
Let's move on.
All right. Do you want to take the lead?
Sure. Cool. Let's see. So when we're talking about complex board states, what do we mean? We mean when the board has gotten to a position where you and your opponent have run out a fair number of creatures, and usually it's a mix of air and ground creatures, and you have to figure out what your role is with the given state of the board. So are you the aggressive attacker that, you know, that's going to be using his cards in hand to clear the way for your creatures to get in and do damage? Or are you looking to kind of marshal your resources and make the effective blocks necessary to see the later part of the game and maybe kind of build an assault from the later half of portion of the game. What else?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, when are you supposed to stop attacking? You know, when does the board shift? What are you supposed to be doing? How are you supposed to be playing it? Are you, can you go over them? You know, so like, do you have cards in your deck like Hypersonic Dragon, Asperia Skywatch, Angel of Serenity? World Spineworm, God forbid, you know, just something that, you know, okay, if I don't attack here, I can see more cards, and then eventually I'll draw my out, and then, be able to go over them.
Mm-hmm.
Or am I in the deck that, like, well, I have infinite 2/2s, and I already used my Bluster Squall, and, my Teleportal, you know, I don't have Teleportals, so really, I need to get in as much damage as humanly possible and try to finish them off with my explosive impact.
Right. I'm trying to remember certain scenarios that I recall when playing. And, you know, there's sometimes you get into a game with somebody and you feel like you're on the back foot and you have to start playing defensively. And then you realize that your opponent decides to essentially skip their attack phase, and you felt like you were kind of, you know, you were the one that had to be playing more cautiously you were the one worried about making the wrong trades. And, you know, it's times like those where you kind of get a feel for how the game can kind of turn on, you know, obviously from draw to draw, but, you know, just through the phases, things shift. And that's the type of signals and reads that you really want to kind of get versed in picking up on. You know, your opponent was just attacking last turn. What is it that's changed between now and then that's put you kind of in an alternate position from where you were last turn?
Yeah, it's something known as, or that a lot of people will refer to as stabilizing, you know, like, when you feel like you're back off and then you play, you know, like Hover Barrier into of Deadbridge Goliath, God forbid, or something, you know, and then they stop attacking, and you're like, well, I thought that, you know, I thought that I was going to have to make these awkward blocks again, but obviously he doesn't feel like, you know, he feels like he can't, or he doesn't have any profitable attacks here. So now I've stabilized. I've gotten to a board state where I don't have to worry so much about damage coming through. I can play things such as Pyroconvergence, like in Thought Flare, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and generally, you know, the thing about spells like Pyroconvergence and Thought Flare are that they need to see a board state that is very stabilized. You know, you're not, I mean, sure, you can in a last ditch desperation cast your Thought Flare to try to draw something that's going to dig you out. And sometimes you might have to do that. But ideally, the deck that wants to play Thought Flare wants to do it comfortably and wants to have the time and leisure to play that and sculpt the perfect hand, out of that five mana.
For sure.
So what else? What can we talk about as far as
well, we're in return round because season still, you know, we'll be going to, or modern's coming up, but for now, let's talk about limited. You know, what kind of cards like complex board states? How do I know that I want to get to a point where it's complex, it's stalled out, where you know I've clogged up the board essentially, like I was talking about with Righteous Authority. You know, I've played out two Armory Guards, a Catacomb Slug, and you know, Golgari Lawnmakes. You know, I have the but I can't attack into his things. He can't attack into my things. How do I know when I'm supposed to be in this position, and how do I know that I'm not supposed to be? Like what kind of cards in my deck will tell me?
Okay, so let's see. Cards like that are anything like you were saying with the big butt. Anything that's going to come down early and help you keep their attackers off. So if we want to get specific, cards like Lobber Crew, Doorkeeper, and then, you know, anything, what else? Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, like, Stab Wound or any of the Guild Mages, I guess.
Right, and why are the Guild Mages something that want to see the slower board states?
Because, like, if I have 8 mana and I have no cards in hand or, you know, 2 lands in hand or whatever, I don't want to be under a lot of pressure to just dump all my lands into their abilities. Nivik's Guild Mage, if I draw a blank, I want to be able to loot twice or whatever. Or if I draw an action injunction, I want to copy it 2 times, hopefully, like, you know, that'd be the best.
Or, yeah, at least copy it.
Yeah, at least copy it so I can detain 2 things and draw 2 cards.
Right.
You know, obviously the Celestial Guild game mage, V2 Ghazi, just wants to, you know, populate a million things and take over the game that way, so.
Right, so they capitalize on the slower pace of the game to just essentially, you know, focus all your resources into whatever it is that they do and make, you know.
Yeah, because these kind of stalled board states usually come out to what's called top decking, where, you know, I draw, or we're really playing off of the top cards on our deck, so top decking. And, you know, if I blank as often as my opponent blanks, but I have a guild mage, my board state's going to start looking better and better every turn, whereas his board state's going to, you know, be purely based off of his top deck.
Right. Yeah, and that's a good spot to be, for sure. So, you know, a lot of the decks like this tend to be more controlling, and what that means is essentially they're putting a larger stake in a fewer amount of actual cards that can win you the game. And they're looking to kind of stretch that game out with things like removal spells, bounce spells, you know, in this format we have detain spells, but things that are going to draw cards, what else? Yeah, things like that they can stretch the game out. And, and I kind of lost my train of thought, but killing creatures that need to be killed, and then waiting to draw whatever it is that's going to help them ultimately win the game, as opposed to, like we've gone over before, the more aggressive style, which is more obviously combat focused and getting more creatures out and attacking with them.
Yeah, you play a million Rakdos Shred Freaks because you don't care about them. Whereas these more controlling decks play like a single Sphinx of the Chimes and then a bunch of just, removal spells. And then, like, if you kill my Sphinx, you win the game because that's the only way that I'm going to deal 20 points of damage. So.
Yeah, and ways to obviously draw, increase your chances of drawing that card and, if you do ultimately end up doing that, ways to hopefully protect it if necessary.
Yeah, obviously.
So
I am not advocating playing a one creature deck, by the way. Do not do it.
No, clearly not. That would be... Although, you've heard a lot of people asking about the 39-land pack rat deck.
Somebody said that somebody won a PTQ like that, but I want to see the results. If anybody has, actual evidence of this, I do not think that it's actually, of course it's possible that 39 of the Swamps pack rats get there, but no. I don't believe it.
Yeah, I could say some things, too.
Yeah.
They wouldn't necessarily be true, but...
Well, yeah, I run a lot of statistics that anybody who watches my stream will tell you, whenever I'm like, well, okay, what's my percent chance of drawing a land? What's my percent chance of this? I'm not, to the dot, but I'm very statistically focused, and 39 Swamps Pack Rats does not get there for five rounds, statistically. And the fact that nobody could kill it, the chances of drawing it are low enough that the chance of drawing it every time and nobody being able to kill it on the draw is just unbelievably low. So
yeah, and you still gotta be interacting with what your opponent's doing. I mean, yeah, Pack Rat is really strong and really great and everything, but if you're just trying to draw that one card with your 39 lands,
if you roll a two, you're dead. Even then, you only get Well, I guess you're not dead. You're still getting one rat per turn, but kind of the power of pack rats is when you do hit that sixth mana where you're like, my pack rat just got twice as big, go.
Yeah.
So.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Broke All right. So, are we going to talk about cards that, don't want a...
Yeah. To sum up, the cards that do like installed board state are things that give you something to do, such as drawing cards or like Nivix Guildmage or whatever, any of the Guildmages, something to do with your mana. Because if you're tapping out all your mana every turn, you're gonna be better in your board state a lot more than your opponent, or just kind of improving your chances to win by grinding out small advantage. Like Nivix Guildmage, if you get to loot three times in one turn, and even if you draw land. Then, you saw three more cards in your deck than your opponent did. So even though you're like, God, I can't believe that, I drew three cards and they were all lambs. And then, he rives just his one, Armada Worm or whatever. That's unbelievable. Yeah, it is unbelievable, but, statistically speaking, you're going to win that game more times than your opponent because he has, one draw step and you have three, so.
Sure.
And then other things that just allow you to further yourself towards your goal of winning, whether it's through damage or whatever. So, Lobber Crews, Doorkeepers, Stab Wounds, I drew a land, whatever, past the turn, and then Lobber Crew deals 1 point of damage at the end of the turn, you still got yourself 5% more towards your goal of damage. Give your opponent a zero, or stab wound, doing 10%. So, those are the kind of cards that you want to look for in stalled board states.
And also to help.
Help you.
Create those things.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So things that don't like them, what do we got there?
So anything that's, early and aggressive. Anything that's focusing your efforts into, you know, focus, for instance, let me give a scenario. Rakdos Shred Freak, obviously, like we've said, and cards like that where your objective is to either, you know, attack early and keep the way clear with removal spells, so you're spending cards in your hand to help your 2/2 get another attack in, or you're somehow putting something on top of that 2/2 or whatever to make it bigger, like a Deviant Glee, and therefore you know, it negates your opponent's ability to effectively, you know, block and trade for your one fast creature. Or two, whatever.
Yeah, so early things such as like Crosstown Courier, stuff that we don't want to see off the top. Things that we want to hit on curve.
Yeah, like, yeah. You want to be running, you know, obviously aggressive curves 2 into 3, and then probably by then you're either hoping that your opponent hasn't done much, or the thing that they have played, you have an answer in hand to sweep aside, or just, you know, run over them and force them into bad blocks.
Yeah.
Let's see. So, let's see. And then, you know, the aggressive strategy, and this isn't anything that you can really, you know, count on or in any way affect. But, you know, you're obviously looking to just to run out early and capitalize on any stumbles that your opponent might make. For instance, missing land drops or like we said, getting a slow start, things like that, where that can really punish them. If you're off to a fast start and your opponent is trying to get down that Ogre Jailbreaker to start blocking, but he can't draw his fourth land, then you know, every one of those attacks that goes unblocked is that, you know, is very much better for you, because then you're just getting them down before they can drop a blocker, and then you just sit there after it's down and wait to draw your 5 damage spell.
Explosive impact.
Explosive impact, yes.
Yeah. So. Or even like a Dino Charger's teleportal or something.
Sure. Where they think that they're at least stabilized. Stabilizing play and you can just magically get that extra damage that's necessary.
Yeah, so that's what people will refer to as reach. So, you know, you're sitting at like 6 health, you're like, okay, or even like 12 if it's teleportal, you're like, okay, I'm fine. Like, you know, you play out your spells, you're drawing, you know, and then they're just in there with a bunch of 2/2s, and out of nowhere they cast teleportal and steal the game from you, you know. Feels pretty bad.
Yeah, that's rough.
Yeah. So things that we don't want to see are going to be these, you know, unless we're holding the teleporter, we don't want to see any more 2/1s. We don't want to see any more 2/2s. We want to see, you know, either teleportal or anything that allows us to get out of this stalled board state before I have to start making blocks, you know, like if you're attacking me with an armory guard that has vigilance,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you're doing 2 to me every turn. I'm like, okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm taking it, you know. I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know, 16, 14, 12, 10. You know, once I hit about 6, I'm like, God, am I going to have to start blocking this thing now? Like, you know, I'm still drawing towards teleportal, but once I start blocking, I'm going to have less creatures, which means that my teleportal might not be as effective.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you don't want to see any more of these 2/2s. Like, they'll bite or they'll chump block for you, but you don't want to see them because that puts you at risk, or gives your opponent a chance to draw a card, which means he could draw, you know, another armory guard, a catacomb slug, virtually anything that can just, like, not care about your little dudes, so.
And that's kind of one of the trickier things about playing those aggressive decks, is that, you know, you... I'm sorry, what... Are you like, what are you flicking away there?
Oh, sorry, I have cards. I forget that my mic can pick up sounds
better now. Yeah, it's picking up pretty good.
sorry about that, guys.
I keep getting lost in my thought here. what was I saying? So the thing, the tricky thing about those aggressive decks is like, how do you minimize the chances of that becoming an issue? Obviously, you don't have any control about what your opponent's going to play, so really, it's up to your deck construction and balancing your creature spells and your removal spells, because I guess you can just get stuck in certain games where you do draw that 2/2 or whatever when you needed to draw your Traitorous Instinct to win the game.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So what was your question?
I know it was kind of not really formulated, but like, you know, how are there good ways to recognize, for instance, when you're building your deck that, you know, your deck is going to need a certain card to really, you know, you look at it and you say, well, I've got all these 2/1s with haste, so I need to make sure that I've got things in my deck that are going to help these guys, like the teleportals and stuff like that. I guess really that's the answer to the question, I guess. You just want to make sure that there's a balance of spells that can have an effect on the board to the point where your little guys can get through if they need to.
Yeah. You just want to be able to, you want your deck to be consistent enough, you know, like, that's why a lot of people argue, 5-drops, you know, how many 5-drops do I want in my aggressive deck? Well, aggressive decks are what's referred to as going under a lot of decks, so they need to, my rule of thumb is my 5-drops either need to be or have haste or be able to affect the board the second they come down. Because if I play a 5-drop that's not hasted, that's just a creature, and then I pass the turn, usually it doesn't have a big enough effect on the board to shift it anymore. Like, it's on turn 5, I really want to be hitting that critical point where either they're starting to make bad blocks, or they're just dead. Like, you know, they're looking to go to conceding. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I've dealt six points or six or ten points of damage, and then I have, you know, say 2/2, 2/3, and then another 3/4 Dead Reveler, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I play Rakdos Ragema, which a lot of people will argue against. But the fact that now I'm putting, you know, 10 points of damage in my opponent's face when they were really only expecting 7. This forces them to start making blocks that they don't want to be making, you know. So, I guess you need to be able to consistently go under your opponent is what I'm trying to say. So whether, you know, if you're looking at picking up a Spawn of Rixmati or a Rakdos Reed Leader, or, you know, some Tenement Crasher or Minotaur Aggressor, some of these higher end spells, Terrace Worms, Xan of Locust, I'm just trying to name them off as I think of them.
Mm-hmm.
Is this really going to help you accomplish your goal of going under their decks? Because every other deck is going to be trying to stop you by playing Void Wielders, by playing Armory Guards, by playing Centaur Heralds, Centaur Healer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just going to be trying to slow you down and stop you, and you need to be able to, every time, hit your 2-drop, 3-drop, 4-drop, you know, be putting the pressure on them so they don't have time to be like, well, I can relax, I can see what I draw next time, etc. So
what do you think about cards like Thought Flare and not the divination, but the
Inspiration. In my aggressive decks.
In aggressive decks, yeah.
Well, if we're talking about that, we're talking about Izzy decks, right?
Yeah.
Is it aggro? Is definitely different than most every other aggro deck out there.
I know.
Because you. What the aggro deck is trying to do is get in for its first 8 to 12 points of damage in the first 4 or 5 turns, then stall the board. You know, and is the decks want to stall the board by just dumping out 2/2s, so you can't really, like, you don't want to attack in with your Rumbleback Rhino or whatever to 6 2/2s. And then once they effectively stall the board out, they're going to want to play Bluster Squalls, they're going to want to play Chemister's Tricks, or they're going to want to play Teleportals to go over your deck. So, or not over, but through, I guess. Whereas a lot of, like I was saying with the Rakdos deck, it's just trying to go under, you know, it's trying to do all its damage early and then just reach over with whatever little burn you out, you know. Like, it's either going to just attack straight through you or burn you out. Whereas Izzadex is are like early damage, stall the board, go through you without you knowing what's up.
Hmm.
Okay. So, the reason why I like Inspiration, not so much Thoughtflare, again, it costs 5 mana, but like Inspiration is great because it just restocks your hand. Like, it allows you to dig deeper to get to those teleportal effects, which you need, as well as just kind of finish it off. Like, or it just gives you the gas, I guess. I do tend to not pick Thoughtflare as highly.
Yeah. I mean,
which is interesting now that I think about it.
Well, the thing about Inspiration is what you're really doing is you're putting a card in your deck that's going to help you draw essentially one extra card, right? I mean, that's what you get out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're spending a card to draw two cards. So you're switching one card for another and drawing an extra one at the cost of 4 mana at instant speed. So I'm just wondering, like, in the aggressive decks, is that type of effect really worth it? Or, I mean, I would just almost assume that you'd rather just, if you have the playables to stock your deck with, just put those in there. Like, put that in, put an extra 2/2 in. Like, if I have a teleportal in as my main win condition, yeah, I want to draw into getting that. But, do I want to have the inspiration in there to try and draw it? Or do I want that inspiration instead to be a 2/2 so that when I do ultimately draw it, he's there ready to get the buff and attack?
There's a critical mass, of 2/2s of bears. 2/2s and more, you know, Steeler Secrets, Splatter Thugs, of course. But, you know, usually once I hit that critical mass...
Which is what? What do you think that is?
I want to say it's somewhere between 15 to 17.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you want the rest to be removal and reach to keep the way clear while you get in that damage. And I think that after that point, I'd rather just have inspirations and whatnot. So the cards that aren't my critical mass of 2/2s are just going to cycle, more or less. You know, I don't care what they are. As, like, if I could play inspiration or a 39-card deck, I'd rather play a 39-card deck. Mm-hmm. But if you're asking me whether I'm going to play inspiration or another creature, I want to play the inspiration just so I dig deeper, you know, just so I have less cards to dig or less cards to draw because my deck is thinned out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I think I understand.
Yeah, I want my knock creature spells to either be reach or removal or something to get me to one of those two, you know, like, so it's either card filtering, reach or removal, I guess. I don't really want, I don't really know what else there is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's cards that do silly
you know, like,
things that don't necessarily help you.
Well, I guess what else there would be bigger creatures, like, you know, Void Wielders or Cobble Brutes, or I am blanking on a lot of creatures. I've been off of Magic for 2 days now, so I can't think of anything.
So, I mean, yeah, but like... Yeah, Void Wielder is a good comparison because
you know, how many Void Wielders do you want in your aggro deck? Which is interesting because like I said earlier, my 5 drops should affect the board right away, and Void Wielder definitely does. But in those Izzity decks, are you actually going to be attacking on turn 5? Like you know, against the slow Golgari deck, or you know, I guess if you annihilate and fired early, then you know Void Wielder can bounce their one blocker. But at that point, wouldn't you rather have Trader's Instinct?
Yeah, depending on the scenario. Sure, probably.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, you're looking to just get the damage in so you can go through them with a teleportal.
So I think I'd rather have Trainer's Instinct, and it's lower on the curve. You know, it's probably going to be a lot better turn 4 than the Void Wielder would be on turn 5.
Yeah.
I still think Void Wielder is amazing. Don't quote me and say I'm down on Void Wielder.
I don't think anybody's thinking that. I just, you know, we're just trying to kind of hypothesize on different scenarios and, you know, what cards fit better and where they want to be. You know, that's really the crux of the discussion.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Cool beans.
Yeah.
I feel like I had more to talk about. My notes got erased because my computer shut down last night. Do you have anything to add on Complex Board States before we continue?
Not really. I think we did a decent job of going over what we wanted to.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about terminology. So I was talking to a guy on stream last night, not my stream, his stream, just about the terminology of that people use, you know, like in social magic. Things like top decking, which is why I've been a little more defining this show than in my past shows. But there were kind of a couple of things. Drawing to your outs is a term that a lot of magic players will use. And what this is referencing is when you're in a grim board state, you have to think to yourself, how am I going to win this game? I know the cards in my deck. I know what my deck does. What can I do to get to that point? You know, for example, Will is sitting there with, we'll just say, 3 Ogre Jailbreakers. And I have a Sunspire Griffin, a Tower Drake, and then 2 Armory Guards. One of my armory guards has a stab wound on it, right? So he's just slowly draining me down, and the board is pretty stalled out, right? So now when he sends his guys in, I have to think about how am I gonna win, you know, like, or when I have removal spells, you know, can I remove my own guy to kill teleport or to kill the stab wound? How can I deal with stab wound to get to the point where I'm gonna win this game? Obviously I'm not gonna trade 4 for trade my creatures away. I guess this is a bad scenario. I'm just trying to think of it on the fly. But, you know, if you know that you have things like Teleportal in your deck, you know you have Explosive Impacts, you know you have Azorius Justiciars in your deck, you know you have Void Wielders, I guess. Anything that will allow you to get to a board state to where when you draw that card, it is at its critical mass of impact, you know. So say you have Supreme Verdict in your deck, and you know that that is the only way that you are going to win this game is if you verdict your opponent's board. So you're going to hold a guy if you can, you know. If you draw Frostborn Weird, you're not going to run it out unless you absolutely need to, because you're like, well, if I draw Supreme Verdict, I want to be able to have a board presence afterwards. So, you know, you hold it, because these are the ways that you're going to win. You're drawing to your outs. Most of the time you're not going to draw them and you lose. Sure, that's fine. But when you do draw them, you'll find that if you've been setting up towards it, you're going to win a lot more of the games than you're like, oh, look, Supreme Verdict, that's a card. And then Supreme Verdict, you know, and then they untap and play another guy, you know, you. So.
Yeah, and a lot of times what you'll see people do, especially in like, on Magic Online, is, you know, they're so, you know, they're so in tune with what's in their deck, and what they'll actually do is they'll bring up their deck list of whatever deck they've drafted just so they can have that idea of what their deck consists of. And, you know, it may seem like a, you know, almost a throwaway idea, but it can really help you almost go step by step, you know, through the possibilities of what your draw phase can consist of and what, you know, and how from that point on, you know, if I hit this card, for instance, the Supreme Verdict, if I hit this card, how it's going to affect the board, you know, the board from then on out. So people do that and draw to your outs, you know, they say that as a way to be cognizant of what is in your deck and be ready for that card that's going to help you when you draw it. because if you're just kind of washing through the game and kind of going, well, you know, I kind of remember I had this card in there, but you know, there's not really a whole lot of chance that I'm really reliably going to draw it. So you play in such a way that you're not ready for that card when it comes. I mean, you're not setting up for it to happen. You know, whereas before you'd say, well, if I can just get one extra draw phase, you know, to draw this card, I can possibly pull this game out of the fire. So instead of letting this, you know, 4/4 flyer hit me in the air, I'm going to throw away my 2/2 flyer, just for that chance. I'm ready to make that trade because it's the only way I see that I'm going to get out of this game.
Exactly. I was trying to find a little bit more. I know we had a lot written down somewhere. Let's see. Top decking, we went over earlier. That's when you either have irrelevant cards in hand or you have no cards in hand, and you're just playing off the top of your deck. What else is there?
I mean, there's all kinds of goofy terminology that, you know, Magic players have kind of cultivated throughout time. Draw go, meaning just, you know, that basically, you know, where you just, you're top decking. That's a similar thing. Just people say draw go. That means, I draw my card, nothing happens, and it's your turn.
Yeah. There's also deck centered around that kind of draw go strategy where, every card in their deck can be played on your opponent's turn. So there's no point in playing a card on your turn that can be played on your opponent's unless you're worried about counter magic or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or, them having some sort of counter spell.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like, shucks. I kind of did want to delve into this topic, but I don't feel like I'm all the way prepared to dive into it. All
right. I know that we're going to do, we've been planning on doing, kind of a starter show where we're going to, when we get ready to do the next set review, if you're trying to get any of your friends involved in Magic, then you're going to be able to send them to this one episode where we'll talk about, you know, people who know the rules of Magic and are sitting down to their first draft. They can use this as a reference.
Get an idea of, you know, what to expect when you come in, because sometimes coming in to your first draft, if you don't know any of the people there and everybody there already has a built-up kind of camaraderie and you feel uncomfortable, and on top of that you have to learn, you know, how the whole process goes, and you wind up opening all your packs at once and doing something goofy and feeling like a bonehead, you know, all that stuff. So we hope to have something in place where, you know, maybe on your way there, you can just listen and get an idea of what to expect, so it doesn't feel like you're getting hit in the face with a wet towel or something like that, which is kind of the experience I had when I first started playing. So,
yeah, no, I really don't remember my first couple of drafts. I know that Marshall, I ended up going to either you and Marshall or Lee and Marshall, and just having you guys sit down with me every time and rebuild my deck so I could get better and better, and eventually I just kind of took over.
See, that's the other thing that I want to address in future episode is, you know, there's a lot of kind of myths and misconceptions that new players have when they come and start drafting, and they almost have sort of their own, you know, everybody naturally, especially when starting off playing Magic and coming from like a constructed background or something like that, they kind of have their own built-up idea in their head of how the game works, and they've played some games with buddies, you know, at the kitchen table and so on. But the difference and things that people often don't realize when they come into play limited is it's just a whole other ball of wax. It's got its own rules and regulations that aren't, you know, known right off the bat. And so people kind of dive into the drafting process and trying to apply their own rules to it, and they wind up, you know, getting disheartened because, you know, it doesn't work out that way. And then sometimes when other people want to offer advice or help because they've been doing it longer, and you can tell when somebody's new, and you can tell when they're just starting out. And so if you try to lend a hand, some people are receptive to it and others are a little more, you know, like, hey, and understandably so, you know, they say, well, you know, I kind of have my own idea about it, and I kind of want to figure this out on my own. So we just kind of want to be a medium in between that point and starting out, and kind of help so that you're not so, you know,
lost in the deep end, pretty much.
Right, coming into it.
Yeah. Do you have anything else to add before I kind of go into wrap up mode?
Just that. And,
okay, cool. It's a pretty good segue because I was able to get my hands on a box of M13 intro decks, I believe they're called. So what these are 40-card decks that just kind of have, like, no rare, or I don't, maybe one rare or something, but, like, not really anything valuable. You'll see them sometimes at, they're handed out quite a bit. And these are pre-constructed decks that are just kind of fun to sit down and learn the game of Magic. And since we're kind of a show based on, you know, learning Magic, getting better and whatnot, if any of you guys do have any friends that, you know, you're like, well, I really want to get them interested in Magic, but I don't really have a big collection or whatever, or I don't have anything pre-constructed to teach him or her how to play, these are the kind of the perfect tool for that that mind frame where, you know, I'll be able to send you, you know, you guys send me an email and say, hey, trying to get my friend into Magic. Can I get a couple of those intro packs, you know? And then you ask me for, you know, a couple of colors, and I'll send these out to you. And they're balanced, you know, within each other. So, you know, if you get, like, the Liliana deck and the Garrick deck together, and you know, you do battle with them, they're going to be pretty much 50-50 as to who's going to win. So, you know, I was able to get my hand on a full box of these. So if you guys have want any of them, just go ahead and send me an email. The email address is in the show notes. I'll go over that in a sec. And yeah, it's a great tool to get people involved in Magic. And you know, I was able to pick this up so I can send it out to you guys for free. And just, you know, just kind of a cool tool.
That's a good idea.
So yeah, go ahead and contact me. Don't be shy. I have an entire box, and I have literally no use for them outside of giving them away to you guys to help you learn. So if you've been thinking about trying to get a friend or teach a friend to play, maybe a little brother or something, and you just don't have the cards or the time to build a deck or so whatever, get in contact with me, and we'll set something up so I can get you guys some cards.
Cool.
Other than that, anything Magic related to add? Oh, PTQs. Let's go over our PTQ. We both had one on December the 1st. I guess that was about 5 days ago or so.
Yeah, what was it, last weekend?
Yeah. It was last weekend. So, how'd yours go?
I gotta remember. Let's see. My pool. I opened my pool. And really nothing very impressive. You know, we went through the registration and all that, which we went over in the last couple podcasts. But I wound up going with a Jund build, which is black, red, green. And my main driving point was a Goblin Rally with Dyna Charge. That was really how I was trying to win the game, with some sort of kind of sneaky get damage in where my opponent doesn't expect it type of thing. I don't really remember much else about what I put into the deck, but it was very mediocre and unfortunately not really well equipped to deal with my opponents who opened some of the better rares and stuff in the format. I won my first game. Did I win my first game? Do you remember? Did you win your first one?
I did not. I was a big loser.
I guess I did lose. Yeah. So forget that. I wasn't that cool. And then in my second game, didn't let my opponent get away with more than he should have. You know, I know we talk about making sure, especially at that level of play, to really be, first of all, be comfortable and feel free to call a judge when you feel that it's pertinent, and whenever there's any bone of contention that might be present in the game state. And I just, for whatever reason, either I just wasn't really concerned or didn't feel like I had a chance anyways. But, you know, there was definitely one scenario where my opponent's, you know, I went to go and attack, and he, my opponent had a couple of blockers, and he went to put one creature up to block my guy. And he did, he signified that by literally overlapping his card over the top of mine. And then he also had a hover barrier that was in play, and I had another creature that was attacking, and he said that, you know, he blocked, so I had assumed that it was just the one creature that was being blocked, and I went ahead and overloaded a Dyna Charge, to try to get in an extra chunk of damage. Well, no, before I did that, I said, well, is this okay? And he's like, I can't remember. But basically, he tried to say that he had blocked with his hover barrier, even though his hover barrier was not touching my guy. It was just kind of hovering directly in front of him. So anyways, that was really a weird scenario. And, it you know, the visual representation was very stark, whereas one guy was definitely being blocked, and he even, you know, signified with verbally that it was being blocked, and the other one just wasn't mentioned and really didn't move, but somehow I was supposed to infer that it had been blocked. Anyways, long story short, I didn't even call a judge, and you know, that was a particular point in the game where, you know, had that damage gotten through, I probably would have stood a lot better chance of seeing the next round. So yeah. I did wind up losing that game, and from there on, I think I won my next one and lost the one after that and dropped because I was out of running.
Okay.
How about you?
So I opened up my pool, and Mythics. I got Mythics.
What?
Yeah, I had a Vraska, and I had a Necropolis Regent, which are not like the insane Mythics, but, you know, they're pretty good, especially kind of as a pair.
Yeah, they're in the same colors.
Yeah, you know, they go together.
That's always good.
I believe my other rares were unimpressive, like Mana Bloom, Slaughter Games. I think I had, I don't even know, just like, not things that you really want to play. I think I had a Supreme Verdict 2 in the pool, which kind of wanted me to splash blue. I also had like two Azorius Guild Mage.
Guild Mage, yeah.
Is that the actual name?
New Prop Guild Mage. Yeah.
I had two of him, so I really wanted to go just four colors. And if you watch my stream, you know, four colors is not not out of my realm. So, but I did not. I ended up just junk kind of token populate. Or not necessarily populate, but token aggressive plus with reach. So really what I wanted to do was play Centaur's Herald, I had three of them. And just, like, pop them all and then just get in there for damage. And, you know, like, and then late game, Necropolis Regent plus Rogue's Passage for lethals, etc. So it's just kind of a green-white-black deck. It was interesting. Round one. What happened round one? I faced an insane Rakdos deck. He goes turn one, Cackler. Turn 2, Gorehouse, Chainwalker. Turn 3, Removal. Turn 4, Removal. And I was just dead from there. Game 2, I was able to steal it from him by going Centaur's Herald. Keening Apparition. Pop Centaur's Herald. Play Centaur's Herald. Pop Centaur's Herald. Play Centaur's Herald. Pop Centaur's Herald. Coruscantite for lethal. And then game 3, he had like the not draw, and I couldn't draw third land. He goes turn 2, Rixmodded Guildmage. Turn 3, Hellhole Flailer. Turn 4, Bloodfringe Giant. Turn 5, Spawn of Rixmoddy.
Jeez.
Yeah, and I was stuck on 3 lands. Ouch. That was cute. That was cute. So, lost that round. Round 2, my opponent had misregistered his deck. So, I won game 1 off of just luck. Then I was able to get a pretty good draw on him and play plenty of Centaur's Herald. Again, plus Swift Justice was able to get me there for lethal.
Nice.
So that was that round. Round 3, my opponent opted to never not show up, so I was able to get that round.
Really?
Yeah. Pretty good. So I'm 2-1 now. I sit down for round, or in between rounds 3 and 4, I had a lot of time, so I took a second look at my pool. And I showed you and our buddy Lee
And you guys both thought that I had an insane Izzet deck that I was really hesitant to play because it had no reach. I believe the curve stopped at 3. I literally just had a bunch of 2 and 3 drops that were, like, I think we had 12 creatures total. And at just 2 and 3 drops, and then I had Teleportal, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, you guys were all like, oh, just go, just do it, just go for it, go for it. Like, you know, that's exactly what this deck wants. And then my deck just didn't do, or wasn't consistent enough. It didn't have a consistent enough plan. And so after testing out a few times, ended up agreeing with you guys and going for it. I believe we also splashed white for the Supreme Verdict, maybe. Maybe not, though.
Well, you were playing the two new profs, right?
Yeah, I was playing the two new profs, so we definitely ended up splashing white. It could have been just for the new profs, and I think an Azorius Rester, but yeah, it was just a bunch of little dudes. Round one, I got caught on two mana again with a Centaur's Herald out, and he just had insane Rakdos again. Then game two, I was able to get out to a pretty early start. But I played Rakdos Cackler turn one, and he ended up blocking with his Tavern Swindler when I didn't expect him to. And then the whole game, I was just shy 2 damage. Just shy 1 creature while holding Teleportal. And so if I hadn't done that, I would have been able to win.
Hmm.
But I was out, so just 2-2 drop. Then we just side drafted and had some fun that day. It was a pretty good experience.
Yeah, won my first side draft.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was pretty sweet. Had a really sick Izzet Rakdos build. Had Mizzium Mortars.
It was the most greedy thing I've ever seen.
I did. I will fess up to splashing one
New Prob Guild Mage.
Yeah, New Prob Guild Mage.
I walk over. I look at his board, right, and I see Ogre Jailbreaker, Splatter Thug, and New Prob Guild Mage on the table, and I look over and see Augur Spree in the graveyard. It was just casually 4 colors, like, no big deal. He just kind of, like, looked over at me and shrugged, like, yeah, what's up? What's going on? What's wrong with this? And then, insane. So,
yeah, that was a lot of fun. I had two what's-his-names in my deck, Hellhole Flailer, which is just right where I want to be.
And he did flail some
hells. Yeah, he did. You put a Pursuit of Flight on that guy, and he gets real happy real fast.
Doesn't take much. I believe that's what turn 4 you hit for 6, turn 5 you hit for 6, turn 7. So turn 6, like, you're dead.
Yeah, my opponent was just every top decks, and they're going, well, I hope this is the one that gets it. Nope. I hope this does it. Nope.
Pretty good card, I hear.
Like, really? Oh, I'm sorry to see you struggle. I'll give my guy flight again and attack? This game is hard.
Magic is tough. I understand well.
Yep. Yeah, it was a good time.
Good times, yeah. Anything else?
I think we're good.
All right, let's sign off. Let's get this wrapped up.
Let's do it.
So, if you like if you would like to follow me on Twitter, my Twitter handle is at Nick Roseman, NIKRSMN. If you would like to get a hold of us on Magic the Gathering Online, my name on there is TaEnd, T3H3ND.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You can do it.
Fine. Will Wade's motto name is Machete with a 7 instead of a T. If you want to send us an email with comments or questions, or maybe request some of those intro decks for you and your friend, go ahead and email me at nikrsmn@gmail.com. If you would like to watch a stream, my stream is twitch.tv/ Nick Roseman, NIKRSMN. You'll find me.
Go on. Sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead, Will. You can take this.
No, I wanted to say I might be ending up changing my name. I think I made a little mistake that I didn't realize I made when I made my name, and I'm gonna probably alter that so before it gets too late.
Yeah, so we'll get we'll get that updated as soon as possible to keep in touch. But until then, twitch.tv/ethereal, replacing almost all the E's with a almost all of them.
Almost all.
There is a link below.
I was so close. I was so close to getting all the E's.
Very close. It's pretty hard. It's a difficult task. I mean, I did it with my screen name on Moto, but I did mix up the order, so like I can't blame you. I cannot fault you.
Yeah. See, you probably have like one or two less E's. That's why.
Yeah. That's it. That's got to be it. Let's see. We did Moto. We did Twitter. We did Twitch. We did email. I believe that's it. Facebook. Facebook.com/theroadtothetop is the Facebook page for the show. If you want to get more involved, go ahead and follow that. We do our deck, or I've posted my first deck tech up there. We'll be trying to get those up more and more regularly. That's where we're going to go over, you know, post the record of the deck, what we liked about it, what we didn't like it, and then our first three picks of each pack. This allows us to kind of talk about it, interact. You know, you can kind of see how we draft versus how you draft. And if you think that we're doing something wrong, you can argue with us. And if you want, you feel free to post your drafts and, you know, go ahead and try and get some community feedback. I check it almost every day. So if you want to post anything, I'll definitely get in there and post my two cents and we can get a nice discussion going.
Very cool.
Yeah, I believe that's everything.
Right on.
Sounds good. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. See you next week.
Thanks for watching.